Welcome to Enid Monthly In Depth, the podcast with Enid people about Enid people. Today's guest is Lura Dahlem. Lura is a Renaissance woman of sorts who has had many different careers and experiences that have brought her where she is today. Listen as we talk to Lura about her life growing up, her different jobs, trainings, and what an alternative and complementary therapist does, and a little bit of advice for the new year. And as always, thanks for listening to Enid Monthly In Depth. Here's Lura. Hey, this is Robert Falk, and I'm here with Lura Dahlem, and she's got some really interesting things that she's going to talk about kind of chronic pain, emotional trauma, alternative and holistic therapies, and that sort of thing, right, Lura?
Absolutely.
Well, great. Well, hey, we're really excited you're here. Thanks for doing this and kind of talking a little bit about this. I thought this would be a really great time to talk about this kind of thing, because this time of year, people get a little down the dump sometimes, whether it's the weather, whether it's family issues that are going on, work issues, whatever else, but for whatever reason, it seems like this is kind of a weird time, doesn't it?
It is, and it's really all about how we hold things in our heads.
Yeah.
And what we do with those thoughts.
Well, good. Well, we're going to get really into that, but I always like to talk a little bit about who people are, where they came from, and how they got to Enid. Is that cool with you?
That's very cool.
All right, great. Well, where were you born, Lura?
I was born here in Enid, actually. Raised in Mustang, and then in my high school years, I was back home in Waukeeta. So I'm a Grant County girl.
All right. And that's where you graduated high school from?
That was my high school experience. My dad was from Waukeeta. My grandparents were there. And my mom was from Lamont.
Okay.
So Grant County is pretty much home.
Yeah. And so you graduated from Waukeeta, hung out there in that area until you went to college after that?
Immediately went off to Oklahoma State University in Stillwater.
A good cowgirl then.
Yes, absolutely. Got my business degree there.
Okay. And what'd you do after that?
Came back to Enid. I was actually here when they opened the Oakwood Mall. I was department manager of draperies and bedspreads in Dillard's.
Okay.
And when they first opened, yeah.
When Dillard's first opened, the mall first opened?
Okay. When the mall first opened, been a while.
You don't seem that old.
I'm not.
So, well, good. Well, it's definitely been an interesting time at the mall, of course, for Enid. So you were a manager there at the department store. How'd you like
for
that?
For a short time. I discovered that after 4 years of studying it, I hated retail. So I went and actually helped lay the tile on the floor when they built McCartney Foods, which is now Jumbo's.
Jumbo's?
The Jumbo, the original on Willow.
Okay, the north. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I actually laid the tile on the floor and helped and ran the drug department there back when the Cabbage Patch Wars were going on during Christmas. And then after that, I went to Skaggs Alpha Beta when they opened that store that later became Homeland. That's where TJ Maxx is now.
Uh-huh.
And finally got on with Department of Human Services and became a social worker.
Okay.
For the state.
For the state, uh-huh.
Yes.
But the DHS for child welfare?
No, I did everything but child welfare and what was CRACS, court-related and community services. I did adult protective services and I did all the family programs. My favorite was when I was in Duncan, I did the USDA job search courses, seminars for people drawing food stamps on how to get into school, how to do all of the different avenues for job search. And I actually did all the food stamp job search courses and seminars for food stamp clients. And that's where I really learned that I loved being at the front of the classroom.
Okay.
That I really enjoyed teaching, guiding, mentoring, and coaching was when I was in those 2 years while I was in Duncan.
Okay. At some point you had kids. Did you have kids by
yes.
this point?
Or I married here in Enid and we relocated to Lawton. And I worked down there and then we moved our home because I didn't want to raise kids in Lawton, more of a small town girl.
Uh-huh.
So I raised my girls in Duncan. So, Shay and Sarah.
Okay. And, they're grown now, right?
They are fully grown. Yeah. And, Sarah and her husband and my grandchildren are all here in Enid, and then Shay is in Stillwater.
Okay, and she's working for Buffalo Wild Wings, right?
She is a manager at Buffalo Wild Wings, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, after she got, and she's got a pretty good degree.
She got her master's degree at Oklahoma State University in international agriculture.
Oh,
so
okay.
Very proud of her.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's really cool. Well, and what'd you do while you're in Duncan? You said you're working down there?
I was a social worker for most of the time I was there. During that time, I also got my second bachelor's degree in pastoral ministry with Kansas Newman, and then went on, was approached and agreed to do the master's program for pastoral ministries through Aquinas Institute of Theology through St. Louis campus, and finished that up in 2001.
What was that like?
That was 9 years of seminary training. So exciting and exhausting all at once. I left Duncan shortly after that. I think moved up to Oklahoma City in 2004 and became the graduate studies specialist at Southern Nazarene University. I ran the MBA program there, and I was also the graduate registrar for all grad students on all campuses. So to get in and out of their coursework, they had to go through me to graduate. And did that for 7 years and taught in the program as well as an adjunct professor. I taught organizational behavior, entrepreneurship, servant leadership, emotional intelligence, all the kinds of things that I'm doing now in my business. I was teaching at the graduate level. And that's
at SNU.
At SNU. Yeah. And that's where I learned that I really love being in the front of the classroom. And I love when the ahas and the O'Reillys go on in the heads of my students. When they get something, it just brings me great joy.
Yeah, I bet. That sounds really cool. I grew up not too far from SNU on 16th and, 13th in Portland and Meridian. So
I know exactly where that is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, lots of right by the Putnam City School District. But, well, that's really cool. So after you were at SNU?
2011, I left the college and I took my practice that I had started, my holistic practice I started back in 1994, after I had back surgery and stumbled onto some alternative and complementary therapies. I developed those and I took that practice in 2011 and incorporated. And so I've been running Living a Lot, a life of transformation, since 2011.
And that started in Oklahoma City?
In Oklahoma City, yeah. I was certified in what we call Faster EFT, which is a form of Meridian tapping. And I was invited to run the office. And so I went in and took over all the processes for sending out training and working with other practitioners across the globe. And the gentleman that had created the program was busy traveling to Europe and Australia and different places and teaching and training practitioners. So I was running things at home. And I developed a following of practitioners primarily with an international flavor. And so I've been doing that ever since. I'm still mentoring practitioners across the globe every Monday.
Well, so you've had a pretty traditional education. And so what drew you to an alternative counseling kind of field rather than a traditional like LPC or?
Yeah, I actually thought a long time about doing an LPC, or I was really more interested in MAMFT. I like the arts aspect of things, but more than the research aspect. And so when I found the Meridian tapping that helped eliminate, completely release chronic pain and emotional trauma, I just fell in love with what it did for people. And so from there, it just naturally developed and grew into a practice.
Okay. So what you said the word FMT. Is that?
M-A-M-F-T.
M-A.
Master of Marriage and Family Therapy.
No. The Meridian tapping.
Faster EFT.
Faster
Emotional Freedom Technique.
Okay. And so talk about that. What's the Meridian tapping and the Emotional Freedom Technique? And that's
well, you've heard of acupuncture, acupressure points,
Sure.
Where you've got places on your skin, and I know your listeners can't see me using my hands here, but you've got places on your skin where the meridian lines between your brain and the organs in your body that create the chemical and electrical impulses that are involved in both pain and emotion. It's where those meridians come to the surface of the skin. Chinese acupuncturists have been using them for thousands of years. When you press or tap or in any way stimulate those points while you're in an emotional state, it can reduce the fight, flight, freeze response in the body, and you can stay calm, you can breathe deeper, you get more oxygen to your brain, you can make better decisions. So in the former meridian tapping that I use, which it works with the subconscious mind, most EFT is conscious mind. The form I use works with the subconscious mind, so we're doing the meridian tapping to reduce that fight, flight, freeze response, give the body itself some calm. Because we talk about stress reduction, stress is actually the body's reaction to what you're perceiving. So if we're calming down the body, then we can then step in with NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, how your mind files away thoughts and memories and gives it meaning. We work with that language of the subconscious mind in order to calm down what's going on with your thoughts and the meaning you're giving it. Then you have a calm reaction and you can make a very specific response rather than a triggered reaction.
Sure. So it? What it sounds like is the first part is that there's some sort of touching on the meridian lines that calms the body. And then you do some training with regards to the language.
Working with the mind. Uh-huh. Yes. And so the mind and the body are actually one thing. A lot of people talk about the mind-body connection, but it's actually one being. There are receptors in all the cells of the body that actually hold memory. That's why when you go get a good massage, and like I just had one at Rustic Spa, you go in and they're digging in a certain spot and then a memory flashes on you, or you might get emotional. It's because the body stores memory. So when we're working with reducing the reaction of the body, then we can also work with reducing the reaction in the mind, and then you have calm. And you can make better choices.
Well, a lot of people from massage therapy, a lot of people think that, it's all the same. You know, people, you're just getting rubbed. But from what I understand, there's significant differences in the different kinds of massages,
Absolutely.
What the goal is and that sort of thing as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, cool. All right. Well, you talked about two different kinds of things you do, but you got like all these letters behind your name. So explain some of the other things that you've gotten interested in and trained in.
Basically, what I've done during the last couple years of COVID is gone back and got board certified in the things that I've been doing for the last decade. So I've spent the last couple years studying, and then I've spent this year traveling and training and getting board certified in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and also time techniques, which is more of a guided imagery using NLP, which helps you go back and release the meaning that you gave to something that's the root cause of why you're either angry or hurt or sad or afraid or you're carrying shame or guilt, any of those things. We go back and it just takes a few minutes and you can go back and actually adjust the meaning. And then when you take that forward on your timeline, think of it of your life in number line form. As you push it forward to the current point of now, then all the meaning shifts and changes and you have more control at the subconscious level and the conscious level, and you have more peace and understanding. So same thing with hypnosis. I'm double board certified in hypnosis, and there's different kinds of hypnosis. So when you go back in a hypnotic trance, people think stage hypnosis when they think hypnosis, you know, the swinging watch.
And we've had the
barking like barking like a chicken, that kind of thing. But actually what hypnosis is an awake state of deep relaxation where that critical factor, that layer of protection between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind relaxes, and you can actually have a conversation in your own head with your deepest subconscious mind so that it can do the heavy lifting. Say we're doing some success coaching and there's something that you want to do and you keep procrastinating. Well, why are you procrastinating? Well, because this isn't safe, or because if I make this amount of money, I'm going to surpass my father, and you can never do that. You know, whatever the meaning is that's in your head. And when we relax that and have that conversation and find that both sides are wanting the same thing, they're wanting your success, and that what dad did or didn't do really doesn't matter for your success, then you're able to raise that up and effortlessly make choices during your day that will allow you the success that you're striving for. So it's like, instead of having to effort it, it just is something that you wake up and you enjoy doing. There are no blocks. So hypnosis is that relaxation state where you can have those conversations, make a suggestion, and then move forward based on that new information in the back of your head.
So when you say make a suggestion and then move forward, that sounds like you'd have to have a lot of trust in the person that, that's doing the hypnotizing.
Absolutely, you do. You need to choose to work with a hypnotherapist that you're comfortable with, someone that you don't mind being relaxed with in a room, in a conversation, someone that you feel good about. But also the suggestions should come from you, not from the hypnotherapist. You don't want someone coming in and in life coaching, in counseling, in any setting, and they're going to tell you what to do next in order to get what you want. Your inner being, your highest self, your subconscious mind knows what's best for you. That's why we have a conscience and we know what's right and what's wrong. So those suggestions are brought about by a series of questions. Say, well, what's the purpose of that? What's the intention of that? What would that do for you? And then we finally refine it to, okay, this is what you're wanting and this is how you're wanting to go about it. One of the catchphrases I developed several years ago that I use with my clients is, what is the next smallest step you can do that moves you in the direction you want to go? And we ask that question at the gut level. We don't ask it at the head level or even the heart level. We go to the head and we make sure things are calm. We go to the heart and we make sure the emotions are stable and feeling good. Then we drop down into the solar plexus area, into the gut. We say, what's the next smallest step I can take? And within 48 hours, those things just kind of bubble up. Some people call it God. Some people call it divine. Being a Christian practitioner, I lean toward that direction, but you don't have to, because we're all intricately knowing what it is that's best for us from the inside out. But sometimes you need someone to ask the right questions or to honor the correct question to ask. For instance, if you tell me that it's January and you went and bought a membership to the gym and March rolls around and you still haven't gone more than once or twice, you think your problem is that you're paying for a gym membership you're not using. When in fact, the correct problem to solve is, if you're wanting to work out to either lose weight or gain strength or feel better about yourself or whatever the original reason was you purchased the gym package, how can we get past that procrastination block to allow you to go in and meet those goals either with the gym membership or with some other means? So asking the right question, solving the right problem are a big part of what you want to do. So you want someone who you're comfortable with.
That makes sense. Well, and I can tell you that one of the things I've talked about a couple of times on this show already is adverse childhood experiences. And you talked a little bit about childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Especially here in Oklahoma, that we've got a higher incidence and rate of childhood trauma than almost anywhere in the country. And so is that something that you focus a little bit on too, to get to that point, to know where people want to go?
If they're wanting to do that kind of work, yes. If we're doing success coaching, we're probably not going to do that. If we're doing just some timeline techniques to take care of problems, like I'm putting together a purple ribbon program right now to work with medical personnel and teaching personnel to help with everything that is going on with both COVID and with the lack of staff that's available to help in those industries. So
just the stress that's come along with...
Absolutely, with the current circumstances. So I'm probably not going to work on childhood traumas or lifetime traumas with those people. What I've done for the last 10 years plus has been do a life list of all those things that have happened to you. And then we look for patterns and themes, and then we go back and find either the first or the worst. We reduce them, release them, change the meaning of how we hold them, see them differently from different perspectives. And that will release like PTSD and different types of emotional traumas that kind of follow us around, so that we're always dating the same kind of people or we're always finding the same kind of coworkers to fight with, because that's filed away in our subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind does not know what's real or what's imagined. It just knows what you're focusing on.
Yeah. And like for me, it was common for me to grow up in a family that everybody yelled at everybody and raised their voices. And so that was normal to me. That chaos that surrounded that was normal to me as I grew older. And even with my family, not now, but several years ago, that I was drawn to that chaos. And whenever I didn't have that chaos, it really felt like that I was lost, or that I wasn't happy or whatever else.
Feels like something's missing.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. People often think that our first instinct is survival, and it's not. Our first instinct is to stay with the familiar. And so that's part of the work I do, is finding what's familiar to you that you keep repeating that you don't want anymore in your life, or that you don't want to pass on to the next generation. That was my stepping stone when I was in my 30s and first encountered these types of holistic experiences, is I did not want to pass on to my children what had been generational in my family. I wanted my daughters and my stepson to have a different experience. And so doing the work on me, I couldn't do it for me. I didn't have that confidence. I didn't have that self-esteem, but I could do it for my babies. Mm-hmm. And so I moved forward based on their future experience more than my own. And now that I've come through the years, a few decades now, I am able to stand in my own ground, in my own purpose, and see that what I contribute is very worthwhile, is very important, and to not do it feels like a betrayal of myself and my purpose here. So I know that I've done the work for myself in order to be a presence for others, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like that there's a lot of the same kind of base ideas, maybe just getting to the process of getting to those and how to treat those is maybe just a little bit different than the core values of fear and shame and hurt that most emotions come from, it seems like. And it's just how we deal with those in a different way, right?
It's the meaning we give them and how we project them onto other people. Mm-hmm. Because we mind read all the time and think everybody else is coming from the same factors that we came from, and they're not.
That's right. Well, and getting out of that narcissistic idea of like how I'm feeling, that's what's most important, and thinking about other people and how they're feeling. I mean, that's important as well, right?
Well, think about it. That's how we're raised. We're raised to think that we are the most important person in the room. When we yell, everybody comes running. And then we grow up and things circulate around us with school and sports and move on forward. And we don't have a means of developing emotionally and mentally that says, oh, wait a minute, other people may not think like I do. Other people may not hold things the way I do. Other people may not love the way I do. You've got the Five Love Languages book. When I work with couples, I use that as a guide. So moving forward in being self-aware first, but then becoming other-aware. And as Americans, we typically don't get very, very far past that other awareness boundary. We consider it. We look at everybody out there, but we don't really pierce that that boundary that says, "Hey, you and I are the same," even though we may hold an experience differently.
Mm. Okay. Well, you talked a little bit about career counseling and something that you did.
Mm-hmm. Something I love doing.
Well, that sounds really interesting to me. So talk a little bit about what a typical person that would come see you would be coming to see you for that kind of career counseling.
Okay. Well, if we're doing core success counseling, there's or techniques, There's actually six areas. It can be relationships, it can be family, it can be spirituality, it can be careers and finance, it can be wealth management. You know, there's different areas that we can approach. But I typically take in the training that I've received and the certifications that I hold, we typically take one segment of life, and then we break it up into what you want. And we look forward from the point of now to 12 months from now. And then just like you would do any type of goal, you're going to break it down into edible pieces so that you can come back to the current point. And you know, if you want $1 million a year from now, that 6 months from now, you better be on your way. And then 3 months from now, you better have some things in place. And, you know, a month from now, there's little bitty, it's kind of like planning a wedding. There's things that you want to get to, and you have to ease your way into it. Because if you try to do it all in a week, you're going to burn out. You're going to be overwhelmed. You're going to not meet the goal that you want. And then you're not going to enjoy it when you get there. So we break it down, and then we have accountability moments where we meet weekly or biweekly, depending on what the goals are, and check in, see what's changed. One of the biggest things that I do with success coaching, and also comes from my seminary background, is that I don't believe in failure. There is no failure. There is only an opportunity to receive feedback and tweak something as you come to a new fork in the road and go down that journey. If you constantly use the language of failure in your head, then you're always going to feel the failure, because what you think, the body must follow. And if you're feeling failure, you're not going to be excited or passionate or even fulfilled by what you're doing today. So we watch the language in the head, we watch what's going on, and we make the chunk sizes small enough that, ooh, I can do that. I can get there. That's doable. And then have someone other than a spouse or a family member. A lot of people think that a spouse or a partner is the best person for keeping you accountable to something.
That's a terrible
that
idea.
That is not their job. Yeah. Their job is to love you in spite of it. So having someone else, someone who's trained in answering and asking questions and addressing problems in a certain way, and allowing you the space to change your mind, is the best kind of accountability to have. So when we're doing, whether it's career counseling, any other area of life, that's kind of the approach we take.
So for the career counseling part, it sounds like it'd be somebody that is either kind of stuck where they're at, maybe middle management, maybe wants to get a promotion, things of that nature. Or if you're an entrepreneur, maybe wanting some help with goal setting, like how do we get there? Let's have a discussion about, what I need to do and set up some processes. It sounds like that you're good at helping somebody determine what processes they need to be successful.
That's exactly it. My best way is by telling stories. So I'll share with you. I had a lady a couple 3 years ago that I had worked with her for 2 or 3 years on different physical realm issues. She was an RN in California, in Northern California. And after 20 years of being an RN, she decided she wanted to be a writer. She was done with the medical field. She really didn't want to pursue her career any farther up the ladder. And she was really funny. She had a dry sense of humor. And I subscribed to her blog, and I would read it, and I'd just sit there and laugh. So we started working on her ability to resign from her position. What we found was one of the reasons she became a nurse was she had an abusive father who kind of ignored her as a child, and she was injured one day and taken to the hospital, and they took her into the emergency room, and the doctor came walking up, and she was in pain, and her father said, "Oh, she's really just okay." And the doctor took that moment to say to her, "It's okay if you're not okay." And she was just a young kid, probably 8, 9, 10 years old. And basically, she heard the doctor standing up for her emotions and her feelings in front of her father, who had always discounted her. She goes on. It never occurred to her that that was one of the reasons she became an RN. And so she had that revelation. After having that revelation, she was, okay, I'm ready to do this. It's okay to be me. She put in her resignation for her job. And a week later, I got back online with her. And she says, you won't believe what happened. They declined my resignation. And I said, are you serious? Well, where are we at now? What do you want to do now? And she says, they are creating a vice presidency for me to do training with the other nurses and medical staff. And they are giving me a raise. And Laura, they're going to pay me $100,000 a year more than I was making before. And I said, so do you still want to write books? She says, absolutely. I still want to write my blog. I still want to write books, but I'm going to do it on my off time. So that's a story of how, yeah, you can have a certain goal in mind, but what actually develops is something that you couldn't even dream up.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Well, you also mentioned a little bit about when you work with families. Is that like family and marital kind of therapies?
I've worked with some of the doctors in the Oklahoma City area when I was working for SNU and living down in Oklahoma City before I moved to Enid. And usually those were second and third marriages. And so people really wanted it to stick, but they were doing the same things that they had always done. So I would work.
Oh, I don't know how that works.
I may have
some experience in that kind of.
You too? So I would work with one of them while the other one was off reading part of the Five Love Languages books. And then I would work with the other partner, and then we'd come together and do a third hour together and help them understand their communication styles and also some of the background. I didn't share because I don't share between family members, but I was present to allow them to share what was going on inside their own heads and their own hearts. And so we did some of that. I had a gentleman in Chicago who had come over from a communist country when he was about 7. He was my dad's age, so he was in his mid-80s. And he flew me to Chicago to work with him and his wife and his daughter and his son and his grandkids a few years ago. I think it was 2016. So I got to work with 3 generations of family, and I had already worked with some of his managers. He owned a Arrowhead manufacturing company and archery company, and he was selling it. And I'd worked with some of his managers who had heart issues as well. So being able to work with families is, it's exciting. I also worked with children, 4 years and up primarily, who were ADD, ADHD. When I was working through a counseling center down by the Capitol in Oklahoma City when I lived down there. And so I would drive to El Reno or more different areas and do the techniques with the little bitties to help reduce the stress on them about how they think and how they perceive relationships primarily was what we did with little bitties and had great success there as well. So families are always a lot of fun to work with.
Sure. And do you still do that now?
I do still do that when someone needs it. In the last couple of years, most of what I've done is online sessions.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. With COVID, a lot of counselors had to, and therapists had to transition to that online video chat kind of thing. How was that for your practice? Do you find that you can still have that same kind of connection over the video chat that you can in person?
Yes, I actually started in 2010 with the video practice at the same time I was certified, and I was astounded that it was just as easy to do something. Then Skype had just started. It's what we were using. It was just as easy and got just as good results over Skype as I did on a phone session or an in-person session. All I have to do is give direction and kind of keep an eye on what I can see or hear and just move forward. And it's never not worked. So Zoom was even better because then we could started doing Zoom a few years ago because we could record and people wanted the recordings whenever we had our group practitioner meetings so they could go back and listen to the different techniques and what it was we were doing.
Well, I mean, they're even doing the doctor's visits, like for
telehealth,
telehealth. And that shocks me because it seems like that would be something that you'd really need to lay your hands on somebody. But I assume, I haven't done one, but I assume since they've become so popular, and my insurance company tries to push it even, that that they must be able to be effective and definitely work. So
between that and some of the apps on the phones that'll take your blood pressure and do different things, yeah, I think it's working.
So. Well, cool. Well, now you live in Stillwater now, but you come over, you have an office here in Enid, right?
I do. I have maintained my office here in Enid since 2018. I'm in the Hedges building. In one of the inner circles inside that roundabout building,
yeah,
over by
the NOC, right?
By the colleges, right? We're about 26th and Randolph, and I'm here every Friday. I usually Friday afternoon into the evening. I've driven over for other time frames, so but traditionally I'm here. I'm part of the Enid Newman AMBUCS, so I come over and do my AMBUCS meeting and then hang out. And if I don't have appointments, I go see my grandkids. So yeah, I'm here every Friday, but I also do a lot of online sessions. So whether it's hypnosis for non-smoking or becoming a non-smoker, stop smoking, or it's...
Is that very, really effective? I've heard about hypnosis for smoking for 20 years.
Yes.
So it must be effective. It, people are still talking
about
it.
It is very effective. The key to it is the person who is coming for the stop smoking session needs to be the one who wants to stop smoking. If they come and want to stop smoking because their wife or their family wants them to, you're dealing with the habit of the mind. And so it's going to throw up roadblocks. You're going to have to do some different work. But if they're the ones that are ready to do it, then the commitment's already made and they need to have already started stopping smoking. So if they're smoking in the parking lot before they come in, and this is my last one, it's way too easy to pick it up on your drive home.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, smoking is one of the most compulsive behaviors that there can be.
Smoking and vaping. Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about the whether or not that the same hypnosis kind of techniques would be effective for drugs and alcohol?
With drugs and alcohol, with addiction type activities, I'm going to go back more toward NLP and meridian tapping because there's a lot going on. Usually addiction is a lot more about relationship. Even weight loss is about relationship. And so as we're working through the emotions and the triggers and the I want to be just like, or I want my experience to be just like it was when I was in high school, standing back smoking, you know, as one of the bad kids behind the gate or whatever it is. People want the relationship experience back. It's not about the cigarette. Suddenly the cigarette or the vape becomes the friend. And we've got to break that connection using different tools than just hypnosis. I use hypnotic languaging for addiction. I don't like to do addiction that much because it is a lengthy process. I have done addiction online. I've helped people get off of Wellbutrin, oxycodone, different things, but it was weekly sessions online, and there was a lot of meridian tapping with it because that's the best way to reduce the body's pain reaction. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of memorized pain, which is what chronic pain is. You'll see your acetaminophen commercials on TV and they'll light up the brain to show where your pain center is. Well, it's not your knee or your elbow. They're showing the pain centers in the brain. It's memorized pain. Mm-hmm. So when we go in and we're working with how to literally rewire the pathway that the brain takes to get to pain, then we're going to use techniques other than hypnosis, which is more suggestibility. So if that makes sense.
Sure. Okay. Well, talk a little bit about that. You said that for the chronic pain, you mentioned that a little bit mm-hmm. earlier, but so if somebody's got some chronic back pain or shoulder mm-hmm. pain, neck pain, which is what leads people to those oxycodone right. and opiate addictions, you're saying that there are some techniques that can be successful, that to treat that pain.
It can be if you get there before the pharmaceutical addiction kicks in. Mm-hmm. Because when we've got a pharmaceutical addiction, we've got the original pain, we've got the fear of the pain coming back, and then we've also got the pain that the body experiences, the biochemical pain the body experiences from withdrawal from those pharmaceuticals. So we've got different types of pain, different layers of pain, and different kinds of fears that we're dealing with. If we can get to chronic pain, let's say fibromyalgia. A lot of fibromyalgia is due to trauma, and a lot of trauma was endured either in childhood or early teens, early 20s. That's where most of the women that I've worked with have endured trauma, and now they are literally, their body is wearing their pain sensors on the outside of their skin. It's learned how to adapt to keep them safe. I had a woman that had her fiance had died in a car wreck, and within 10 months, she was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I was able to work with her in the course of 2 hours, and we completely eliminated her pain, because it was all about the pain of the heartbreak and the loss of her relationship. Her body was hanging on to that because it was the last experience it had of him. She was in the car. She was in the car wreck as well. I've had several practitioner friends that I've helped through training, mentored through training, who had fibromyalgia for over 10 years. They had to do a little more work. 1 2-hour session wasn't going to do it. But they were also willing to do the work and ready to change their life. One lady in particular came from Hawaii. Not only did we have to do her fibromyalgia, but once she was basically released from her pain habits in her mind, then had to retrain her husband that he no longer had to be her caretaker. So there's a whole relationship dynamic that goes around pain. If you're receiving disability benefits and you've been receiving them for years, there's a mental mindset that says, if I get better, I'm going to lose my money. Now, it's not because someone is deliberately trying to be on benefits. It's because the mind naturally goes to that conclusion. So there's different layers of why it's good for me to hang on to my pain. And those are the questions that we start asking.
Sure, that makes sense. Just in general, it sounds like a typical person that would come see you is wide-ranging. It could be somebody looking for the career counseling that we talked about, somebody looking for goal-setting techniques, somebody looking to address some chronic pain issues, family therapy, trauma therapy. Is there anything else that... I mean, that's pretty broad-based.
It is broad-based.
Right?
If you want to feel better, my little tagline on my website is look better, feel better, live better, then I have something to offer you. And what I do is I teach the techniques to my clients so they can use them for themselves, and they only have to come back to me when they hit a wall. So that's my belief system. I'm here to help you change your belief system so that you can feel better.
You got to want to do it, though,
right? You've got to want to do it, and you're the one that's got to want to do it. You don't want to do it because your husband, your family, your whoever wants you to do it. You want to do it for yourself. It's because it is a mindset. It's a change of a mindset.
It's so funny that whenever I see people in Celebrate Recovery, I know immediately whenever they start talking about why they're there, and if they keep focusing on their wife and that they want to get their wife back, or they want to do this for their kids, or they want that, I know that they're not going to be there for very long, because I know that it's not going to work for them.
Right.
But the people that are there that say, I need to make my life better, then that's when things start working, which I'm assuming would be the case with you as well.
Absolutely. And with my experience, you and I have talked about this off mic, that I started with Codependence Anonymous back in 1994, before they even had their own big book. I actually pre-ordered the big book. So I've been involved in 12-step programs all that time. And I actually started my holistic practice because I had back surgery. The lowest disc in my back blew out in 2 different directions, and I had surgery, And then I found some holistic therapies, kind of one of those God accident things, during a bachelor's class on prayer, and ran into a retired psych nurse and a Native American shaman who were having a conversation and learned energy work. And that's where I started, was with therapeutic touch. And then when I was in my master's class, I was, my master's class is for pastoral ministry. I was encouraged to go and get Reiki certified, and because I was able to do the energy work. And so I offer that. I don't talk about it a lot, but when people want Reiki or they want therapeutic touch or they want that relaxation energy experience, I'm available for it. It's something that my kids loved when we were growing up. But I learned that it was my back pain that from having my surgery that actually started me on this journey in 1994. And when I started working with resources like Louise Hay's Heal Your Life book, and started realizing that there is emotions behind pain. There is life experience behind the pain experience I am having today. So I started researching the area of my back that had gone out and found out it was finances and intimate relationships. And I was in the middle of losing my first marriage. So that fit perfectly well. So now when someone has shoulder pain, foot pain, throat pain, whatever's going on, I've been able to study between Louise Hay and some of the other resources I have enough to be able to say, okay, is this going on in your life? And people think I've got magical thinking or mind reading. It's because I recognize how the body takes on the mentality of the emotions and the thoughts. And then if you don't release it, it will get your attention.
Well, one thing that it's shocking how much development in the education and knowledge about how our minds work over just the last 5 or 10 years. The old director of the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health Substance Abuse Services would show these slides of MRIs that they did, mm-hmm. Of people that were under that people before addiction, after addiction or during addiction, and then after they'd been clean for a while, and the what centers of their brains would light up. Not necessarily while they were under the influence, just in general, that those addictions just killed these parts, not killed, but darkened these right. parts of the brain, and they just weren't working anymore for addicts. And then shortly after they stopped, like 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, those started lighting back up again. And so, I mean, that's just something small that they've learned over the last 5 or 10 years. And so, I mean, there's no telling what they're going to know in 5 or 10 more.
Oh, yeah. It's really exciting field to be in. Well, it's the same thing with athletes. There's a famous study where they had the athletes go through the routines, and maybe they were runners or something, and they had all the little receptors on them to see how everything was firing. And then they had them sit down and relax in a chair and go through the routine just in their mind, and the same neurons fired. Wow. The same muscles fired, because your subconscious does not know the difference between real and imagined.
Yeah. Well, that's just stunning. That's stunning. So, well, this has been a really fascinating conversation. I think it's really interesting. You talked about a website. Tell us your website.
www.livingalot.com. And for the people in the Enid community, if they would put /local, that will take them to a special page that's specific to the wellness place. And they will, if they book there, they receive 70% off of the normal price.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because, you know, Oklahoma, we're a little less in the cost of living than we are in Europe, East Coast, West Coast. So I have dedicated a special page. So any of my advertising that I've done with Enid Monthly or other sources in the local area, you'll see that web address in order to get to that page and receive your discount.
Yeah, and you can check out some of the encouraging thoughts that you've had over the last few months in the Enid Monthly. So pick up one of those. Do you have any other resources, a Twitter account, a Facebook page?
I do not Twitter. I do have a Facebook page for both Living a Lot, which is my corporate page, and then for the Wellness Place. So that's available, and you'll see my little avatar that's in the Enid Monthly ads there. And I don't Twitter. I don't do a lot of things, but I do Facebook, and I have the business pages, and I have the website. and I text on my cell phone number, not on my business line. That's good to know.
Well, good. All right. Well, great. Well, thanks for being here and thanks for talking about that. Go check out the website and the Facebook page. And I can tell you, just knowing Laura for the last several years, that she's just a delightful person. And I think anybody that would go to her would be very interested. And I think she would have some really great advice to give. So thanks, Laura.
Thank you so much, Bobby.